So Joseph will now briefly read a little piece, a teaching of Ajahn Chah that was the first thing he translated into English many years ago when I was actually I think I was an anagarika or even a layman. I was doing my little bit to help him with putting this together. So this is back from 78 that this teaching comes.
Before I share this reading with you, I'd like to give you a little context for how it came about. We've been together here for the last, since yesterday morning, many of you, and all the sharings and wonderful things you've been hearing about this great teacher, master. And last night, those of you that came for the different films probably got somewhat of a feeling, especially from the mindful way of what it was like to be in the forest, and to just kind of paint a picture, if you will. I can remember my first time to Wat Nong Ba Pong, and you've come from an all-night train ride and out on the hustle and bustle of the city, and then this, not a long ride to the monastery, and then you come to the kind of the gates of this monastery. And outside are just rice fields, so there's not much shade, so, and it's very hot. And immediately when you step inside of this sanctuary of peace and tranquility, and all things in nature preserved with the utmost care, that you really feel you're coming into the presence of something, of someone, of something. And so it was always a great joy to walk through those gates at any given time. When Ajahn Sumedho and the rest of the Western monks, three others in 77, went to England and remained in England, I was asked by Ajahn Chah, or told, depending on how you'd like to interpret it, that I was next in line to be the senior monk. I was young, I was idealistic, and I was not very well versed other than the United States Army in how to train people. And those that were with me, I'm sure, can tell you some rather interesting stories. In 1978, this was approximately about a year, maybe it was my second rains retreat as the senior monk there. And we were probably about 5 miles from Venerable Ajahn Chah's monastery. So whenever there was an opportunity to go there, one would seize that opportunity. And as a senior monk, you kind of can call the shot somewhat. So I would go whenever was appropriate. So one evening, I went over, and I can't remember exactly why I went. And so picture, if you will, kind of walking in the evening, the quietness of this monastery, and his kuti, his little hut cabin that I described yesterday, that was shaded and cool, that came in there and bowed and sat with him. And there were not a lot of people with me, and there were not a lot of people there. And so just sitting in the quiet in the presence of Ajahn Chah. And he, as I said yesterday, this was some of his greatest teachings, I think, and the fondest memories that many of us had were from the context of this solitude, this quietude, and this cool kind of place of his. It was like an underneath kind of veranda, if you will. So upstairs was where he rested and slept, downstairs where he received guests. And so he gave this very simple teaching. So I was sitting quietly, as one did, and respectfully, and listening. And as he was giving this teaching, I was kind of applying it as best as I could. And then I returned to Wat Bung Wai, and the very next evening, I was doing walking meditation. And what he had said the night before came back to me so lucidly, so vividly, so clearly, that for the first time, and really the only time in all my years with him, I was inspired to write this down. And so immediately I stopped my walk-in meditation, and I went in and I wrote what I'm going to share with you. And at that time, I was reading, I think, some Dogen, and I think we just got Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind. So it was kind of in the spirit of the master, being in the presence of the master. And I still have my original handwriting, and with the help of a couple of my brother monks, and I think Ajahn Amaro was one of them, just kind of polished it. But as you hear it, it's pretty much how I heard it and committed it to writing in September 25, 21, Buddhist era, 1978. And I titled it, Learning to Listen. During an informal gathering at his residence one evening, the master said, "When you listen to the Dhamma, you must open up your heart and compose yourself in its center. Don't try and accumulate what you hear or make painstaking efforts to retain it through your memory. Just let the Dhamma flow into your heart as it reveals itself, and keep yourself continuously open to the flow in the present moment. What is ready to be retained will remain. It will happen of its own accord, not through forced effort on your part. Similarly, when you expound the Dhamma, there must be no force involved. The Dhamma must flow spontaneously from the present moment, according to circumstances. You know, it's strange, but sometimes people come to me and really show no apparent desire to hear the Dhamma. But there it is. It just happens. The Dhamma comes flowing out with no effort whatsoever. Then, at other times, people seem quite keen to listen. They even formally ask for a discourse, and then, nothing. It just won't happen. What can you do? I don't know why it is, but I know that things happen in this way. It's as though people have different levels of receptivity, and when you are there at the same level, things just happen. If you must expound the Dhamma, the best way is not to think about it at all. Simply forget it. The more you think and try to plan, the worse it will be. This is hard to do, though, isn't it? Sometimes, when you're flowing along quite smoothly, there will be a pause, and someone may ask a question. Then, suddenly, there's a whole new direction. There seems to be an unlimited source that you can never exhaust. I believe without a doubt in the Buddha's ability to know the temperaments and receptivity of other beings. He used this very same method of spontaneous teaching. It's not that he needed to use any superhuman power, but rather that he was sensitive to the needs of the people around him and so taught to them accordingly. An instant demonstrating his own spontaneity occurred once when, after he had expounded the Dhamma to a group of his disciples, he asked them if they had ever heard this teaching before. They replied they had not. He then went on to say that he himself had also never heard it before. Just continue your practice no matter what you are doing. Practice is not dependent on any one posture, such as sitting or walking. Rather, it is a continuous awareness of the flow of your own consciousness and feelings. No matter what is happening, just compose yourself and always be mindfully aware of that flow. Later, the master went on to say, "Practice is not moving forward, but there is forward movement. At the same time, it is not moving back, but there is backward movement. And finally, practice is not stopping and being still, but there is stopping and being still. So there is forward movement and backward, as well as being still. But you can't say that it is any one of the three. Then praxis eventually comes to the point where there is neither forward nor backward movement, nor any being still. Where is that?